So when I say the period in which the scriptures were written, let's just unpack that a tiny little bit. Isaiah's reading from the first reading, one of his students, wrote that those words of encouragement and hope while the Israelites were still in exile in Babylon, waiting to return. Now, for 3 weeks now, you've heard me mention that what we're getting from Isaiah are the hope-filled letters to encourage the people in this time of waiting so that they would not lose hope. We come to the letter of James, the second reading today. And by the time James wrote his letter, the church, with ordained bishops and the structure, pretty much as we know it, was already established. So the practice and the link with Judaism was now left behind. They were not allowed, those followers of Christ were not allowed into the synagogues. They were banished, exiled again, if you like. And so the new church, the independent church, was up and running. And James is writing to this young church to encourage them. And it's the core message in there is, of course, be patient in this time of waiting. And then we come to the gospel, and John the Baptist is locked up in Herod's prison, and he sends his disciples to Jesus to say, "Are you the Christ? Are you the one that we've been waiting for?" Now, for us sitting here tonight, it might seem a strange thing to ask. But at that particular time, there were several branches of Judaism. And within those branches, therefore, there were several understandings of who the Messiah would be. Some of them thought that the Messiah would be a military figure. Others thought that he would be a prophetic figure. So Jesus is in the middle of this mix, as it were. And that's why he says there to John's disciples, not his own, but to John's disciples, "What did you come out here to see? What were you expecting?" And he talks therefore about a reed blowing in the breeze. The word that's used there is actually the name of the reed, which is found in Egypt only, against the banks of the Nile. And it's the reed that is used to cut down to make pens with at the time. But there's none of those present where Jesus was on the Jordan. The reed that was present there is a very tall reed, and it's got a big bloom, a big fluffy bloom on the top of it. And it was so tall that it was quite often used as a walking stick. Very different. So people may have known about an Egyptian reed, but they only knew about this reed because that was the one that they experienced, the one that blows in the breeze. So what did they come to see? They didn't really know. And images of reeds and fine clothes and prophets of the past, they weren't all that helpful. And he therefore sends them back. And he says, "Now John the Baptist is the greatest of the prophets, but something greater than John the Baptist is here." So Jesus turns the spotlight away from the curious mind to letting them witness there and then his presence, who he was. But they were blinded by that. They did not understand that. And I understand that myself. They would have been grieving in a sense because their hero, as it were, John, was locked up, and before too long he's going to be killed. So these people were living in a time of great uncertainty. They were living in a time of expectation, and they just did not know whether their expectations were ever going to be fulfilled. So they questioned everything. Is that a little bit familiar with what goes on in our own life, where we question so much of the things that we simply don't understand? We have dreams of and great hopes for things, and we don't see them fulfilled. And in the meantime, we get ourselves very perplexed, a lot of us, and we hurt and bruise ourselves along the way, and we hurt and bruise others along the way, because for the main part, we are impatient. James's letter begins off by saying, be patient. So this is the time when Jesus had said that he would return. Advent, we're stuck in that middle time. We don't know when Jesus will return. We do know, because our faith tells us through the grace of God, that he will return, but we don't know when. So we can identify, I guess, a bit with the early church, a bit with the exiled Israelites, a bit with John's disciples. We are a little perplexed because things aren't always coming to fruition in the time that we want them to, which is now. We want everything now. If you go and look at St. Google for some of the definitions of patience, you'll get a bit of a smile out of it, some of you, and some of you may even be made feel a little uncomfortable. Patience is the word that I hear probably most commonly in the sacrament of reconciliation. It's not because people are patient, it's because they confess that they are not patient, that they are impatient. So definitions of patience can be things like this. It's the art of losing your temper very slowly. It's the art of concealing or hiding impatience. It is something that while driving, we appreciate in the driver behind us, yet we resent in the driver that's in front of us. Patience is, as we're told, the art of waiting for those who come late. That doesn't apply to this Mass, I just want you to know. So patience hits many, many chords in our life. For those of you who are parents and grandparents, our patience gets tested because in the Advent time of your life, this time of your life, you are waiting for something to be revealed or to happen with your children or your grandchildren. And we want that to be revealed and start happening now. And firstly, research tells us that the first thing that we want to be revealed and secure in our children is actually their safety. Not what they're going to be when they grow up so much, but are they going to be safe in the journey of life? Our patience gets tested. The saying I remember as a little boy being told me, patience is a virtue, possess it if you can. It's seldom found in women, but never in a man. Now, the younger generation probably have never heard of that one. But patience hits every one of us, and we exercise impatience to our peril. James uses the example of the farmer. Now, I grew up on a farm, and I don't think that sort of imagery was ever presented in my growing up years. How patient a farmer is once he prepares the soil, then plants the seed, and then waits for the rains, and sometimes waits and waits, and then the seed eventually comes. It was never anything to do with patience, because from my experience, the farmer was always kept so busy doing other things. And it seems that his hope, not his patience, was always tested. And that hope for a farmer is things like, I hope it does rain. Some would be saying now, I hope it doesn't rain. We do not want rain anymore. It may not be patience, but in the practical example of the seed being planted and for somebody to wait for that to sprout, yes, patience is probably a suitable example. But for most of us, we get sidetracked by the everydayness of our life, which is busyness. And that busyness impairs our ability a lot of the time to be patient. It's hard work being a parent. It's a hard work being a person in the world this day and age. And no wonder we get a little confused. We have so much goodness around us, yet that tests our patience. Where do you go when the computer doesn't work when you want it to work? Why doesn't that person pick up the phone when I'm calling now? And we do. I don't get a response to that email immediately. That happens in our world so much these days. Yet the technology itself is a good thing. But the busyness the way that we manage it is not always that healthy. So at this particular time in Advent, we take stock of ourselves. I know it's Rejoice or Gaudete, Joy Sunday, but we need to take stock of ourselves, I think, and see, where has the joy gone from my life? Has my impatience strangled the joy in my life? Has my impatience stopped me seeing the potential in my child, my grandchild? Has my impatience made me a very unhappy, unsettled person to be around? If that's the case, then let's use these last 2 weeks of Advent to help ourselves. Our patience is just a part of life. It comes from the same word as passion, and the word passion means to suffer. So if you feel that patience is derailing your life, well, then you are suffering. And then you might just align yourself with the patience of Jesus himself, who suffered. The two words go together. As I say, they come from the same root. So patience, it always comes at a cost. You'll pay for it with the coin of self-restraint, which is a good thing. Or you'll pay for it with the coins of regret if you let impatience take over your life. You may not like it. You may think that you even lack it. But like the seed in the soil, your patience and the way you exercise your patience will help you grow.